Have you ever wondered what it means to build with intention? Well, I'm Matt, and with my co-host Hamish, we are dedicated to pushing boundaries and building better homes. So we welcome you to join us on the Mindful Builder podcast, where we are committed to driving positive change in the building industry by surrounding you with experts in their field and being open about our lives as builders. So join us on this mindful journey of construction by subscribing to the Mindful Builder podcast. Please note that all advice provided here is general in nature and may not apply to every individual situation. It is important to consider your unique circumstances and consult with relevant professionals or experts for tailored guidance. Use this advice as a starting point for reflection and exploration, and always trust industry professionals when making decisions. How this will kind of work is each month we're going to have a bit of a topic discussion. I'll bring this closer, a topic discussion around a certain building topic that we think is really, really important. This month we're going to be talking about treated pine versus standard pine battens, and we're going to dive pretty deep into it. So the whole idea is not to go back to basics, is to actually sit on this one topic and just really unravel it and try and unpack the situation. Now, we have some very, I would say, smart people in this room. I would say that not only are they sort of fellow colleagues, I'd say they're probably all friends, which is cool. I don't think that we in our industry get enough to sort of work together. While some of us are competitors, we also hang out and are able to catch up outside of work. Now, there's sort of no wrong or right in these discussions, as which you'll find with in this topic on treated pine versus pine. There are probably two opposing arguments for a lot of people. I know there's some people in this group that will be pro treated pine and some that definitely won't, but that's why we've got this conversation happening. Now, housekeeping. This, as Cam always says, it depends. So this is pretty general advice in nature. Each build is very different. Each project is very different. So whilst this might apply to your build, it also might not. So just take the advice as very, very, very general. Now, I'm going to quickly introduce everyone that is in this chat, and I just want you to keep it pretty quickly simple and just say who you are, what you're drinking, quick 5 second bit of piece of information about you. So I'm gonna start with you, Brad.
As Matt said, I'm Brad and I've got a horse feather. Do you want more?
What is a horse feather?
It's whiskey, ginger beer, and bitters.
Awesome. And where are you from?
The Macedon Ranges. In Victoria, Sanford Build Co.
We also have our good friend of the podcast as well, Cameron Munro. Are you there, Cam?
I am, yeah. Can you see me there, Matt? I think my camera's
yes,
a bit
can.
There we go. G'day, everyone. Perfect. I'm Cameron. I'm a passive house consultant. I do numbers.
And build rocket ships. We are on to Jess.
G'day everyone. My name's Jess. I am from Adelaide. I work for a company called Climbershore in the better building and passive house space.
And we also then have Dylan.
Yeah, g'day folks. My name's Dylan. I run a building company called All One Projects, eastern suburbs of Melbourne, predominantly focused on heritage and deep energy retrofits.
Haim.
Hey team. Hamish. Hello, Hamish from Sanctum Homes.
Hamish.
I'm also co-host of a little podcast called the Mindful Builder Podcast, one of the founding directors of SBA and director of events. And I am drinking a Capital Brewing Co. Alkless drink because I haven't drank for a couple of years. So I call them loser beers. I'm having a loser beer.
Mog.
Matt O'Grady is my name. I'm a carpenter first and foremost. I'm a general manager of PHCP and I am drinking Pure Waters of Tasmania.
Sean.
Hello, everyone. Sean from Haven Homes, Tasmania, down in Tassie, Climate Zone 7. I'm drinking a Bogues St. George, and I am Team
non-treated tine battens. But I'm happy to have my mind changed, maybe.
Now, I got Drew here too, who apparently doesn't like to talk too much.
Hi, guys. Yeah, it's Drew here from Passive Tech with all the mechanical ventilation, blower door testing, and, yeah, a few other things as well. So I've got a – we do the whole of Victoria. We've got a hurrah beer that I found in the fridge. So, yeah, don't know much about them, but, yeah.
And I've got Dan, who is joining us. I don't know if you can actually see him from Germany or hear us. No, can't hear Dan. So Justin is also away on holidays this month. So the cool thing about this is the whole idea is we're all interchangeable a little bit. So not everyone's here. We're still hoping to do this once a month. Now, enough of that. We're going to get straight into the topic. Now, I think Cameron's going to start. Cameron is pro treated pine. So I think just a show of hands here, just anyone else pro treated pine? Oh, no. It's everyone versus Cam.
We're all about to get schooled. Uh-oh.
So, Cam, we'll let you present. I've got some questions here, but sort of jump in and along those, have this natural conversation. Cam, I'm throwing over to you, mate.
All right. So I'll put forward the case for why I think our cavity battens should be treated. And as Matt alluded to, I don't think it's a definitive case. But in my view, there's reasonable evidence why we should err towards treated battens. I think my first argument would be that by going to all the effort that we go to with our WRBs or our sarkings, we're always accepting that we're going to get water past our cladding. That's, after all, why we're doing the things we do with our WRBs. So if you're going to get water past your cladding, and if you look at the standard codes that we use, like ASHRAE 160, we assume 1% of the water hitting the wall gets beyond and onto that WRB face. So in a place like Melbourne, we get about 700 mil of rain a year. So that's about 7 mil of water that's running past your timber battens in that ventilated cavity. So the question then is, can the drying potential exceed the wetting potential? My second argument is that these cavities are extreme environments. So they're really like the outdoor environment, but on steroids. They're far more humid, far warmer, far colder. So with that argument, I'll just show you a little Prezzo thing here, a few graphs, if I can work out how to use this thing. Sorry, bear with me a second. That one, there we go. Okay. So here's a ventilated roof cavity, and I've got two sensors in this roof. So the one on the left is a wood moisture reader. We can buy these things for under $200, and it communicates with Bluetooth via your phone. And so you can see on the left there, got two little points in there. So those are screws screwing through into that batten that then take a reading every 10 minutes or something of the wood moisture content. And it also measures temperature and relative humidity. And then on the right, just got an example of another sensor. These things cost $15. And they just measure the temperature and relative humidity in the cavity. So here I've got some data on the temperature across the last 5 months in this particular building in regional Victoria. It's a somewhat colder climate than Melbourne, but probably not as extreme as, say, your Tasmanian climate, for example. And if we start at the top left, we've got May, so sort of early winter. And in the blue, we've got the temperature in the cavity across the day. So at 0, midnight, through to 24, so midnight the following night. And so if we look in that top left panel, the cavity is getting very cold overnight and much colder than the red line, which is the outdoor temperature. So the outdoor temperature on average in May from this data is dropping from around 10 degrees to maybe 7 or 8 overnight from midnight to about 4 a.m. But the temperature in the cavity is dropping from 5 to close to 0. So it's about 3 or 4 degrees at least colder overnight than the outdoor temperature. But then during the middle of the day, you're getting the opposite behavior. So after about 10 a.m., the temperature in the cavity heats up as the sun comes out, and the temperature in that cavity will peak at sort of 23 odd degrees, whereas the outdoor temperature will only peak at 17 or 18 degrees. And then we see a similar evolution over the other months there. But more important than the temperature is the relative humidity. Because if we're putting this timber in this cavity, the question is, are we going to get moisture building up in that timber? And so the relative humidity in the cavity is on the blue line here. So again, if we just use May in as an example, if I start in the evening from anything from about 8 or 9 p.m. in the evening, the relative humidity in this cavity is going above 80%, and it's staying there until the sun comes up the next morning, about 8 or 9 in the morning. So we're spending a good 8 to 12 hours of the night with very high relative humidity in these cavities. And that's why we see all this condensation dropping out of these cavities in the early morning, which I'm sure we've all seen. So that we're getting an air mass moving into these cavities. It's cooling, and then it's condensating on the cool surfaces. So maybe the back face of the cladding on the surface of the WRB. And then ultimately, at least some of that is going to accumulate in the timber. So I can take it a bit further. So if we look at the critical relative humidity for mold growth in these cavities, if on this graph here, we've got temperature on the horizontal axis, relative humidity on the vertical axis, and then I've sort of clustered it. It's like a density. So the hot spots, the yellow spots, are where lots of my points are. So lots of this data is somewhere between 7 or 8 degrees temperature, but a relative humidity in excess of 90%. So very humid, but also very cold. And then the dashed lines are different mold growth models, the critical relative humidity from those mold growth models. And what we're finding is that anything from about a third to two-thirds of the time, this cavity is experiencing relative humidity which exceeds that for the mold growth to occur. Then you can actually do another analysis using the Finnish mold growth model and look at that the mold index, which would probably a lot of us have heard about. And depending on what sensitivity you assume for the timber, this is where the question of treated versus untreated timber comes in. So if these battens were untreated, they'd be like a sensitive or very sensitive material, which is the green or blue lines here. And we can see within a matter of weeks, the mold index is growing above 3. So this model is suggesting that an untreated batten in this environment would very rapidly accumulate mold. If, on the other hand, it were treated, so a medium resistant or resistant type of timber, it would be the yellow or red lines. And we can see that the mold index can still go up, but it's not exceeding that nominal value of 3. And play the flip side on that. If you go back to that other sensor that we had there with the screw points, the timber is not actually absorbing a lot of the moisture. The moisture, because it's a very time dependent thing, the timber's getting wet overnight but then drying during the day. We're not getting a lot of the moisture accumulation in the timber, and so the wood moisture content is staying well under 16%, which suggests that we're not going to get a lot of rot, at least in the timber. But I think my main point is that these are extreme environments. They're getting very high relative humidity for prolonged periods of time, and to my mind, that suggests we should go for treated timber.
But mold, Cam, just my understanding, mold doesn't mean decay.
Well, mold's got to feed off something, Matt. And so what's the mold feeding off? It's feeding off the timber.
Yeah, I understand that. But treated pine would still grab mold on it, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and that mold model is suggesting that indeed you are getting small spots of mold. But nothing like the levels that you would be getting with the untreated timber.
I noticed in the image, Cam, that that was a roof cavity, not a wall cavity.
Correct. Yeah, that's right, Dylan. Yeah.
Any data on the wall setup?
Yes, I've got a south-facing wall. I haven't shown the graphs here, but it was pretty similar. A south-facing wall with a light-coloured colour bond cladding. So that's the worst case, because the south wall obviously doesn't get the solar, and a light colour doesn't absorb the moisture, the heat as much as a dark colour would. So I would suggest, if anything, it's going to be worse on a wall.
Yep. Gotcha.
Yeah, I was actually going to say the same thing about Dylan. I've read in the chat here before. I was curious about, is there a difference when it's on a wall? And I guess my next question is, does the ability for a roof and wall cavity, his ability to ventilate, change the sensors and readings that you've got there?
So by ventilating the cavity, we're actually, as a design feature, is we're drawing moisture into the system. So we're taking air from outside, we're drawing it into this cavity, and at nighttime we're going to cool that air mass, and we take that air that might already be 70 or 80% relative humidity outside. Now we cool it, so the relative humidity goes up, and we're going to actually get condensation from that air. So ventilated air doesn't always dry a system. Sometimes it can exacerbate the problem by actually drawing moisture in there. And so overnight, the more ventilated that space, the more potential for moisture accumulation in the space. But then conversely, when the daytime comes around and that space, that cavity heats up, so more ability for it to dry. So the balance, the problem as I see it, is that, is that drying during that 4 to 8 hours during the middle of the day going to exceed the ability for the system to wet overnight? Because we've got to make sure by this time the sun goes down in the middle of winter, 5 p.m., that system's completely dry, so we don't get that net accumulation over the days and weeks in winter.
You're on mute, Matt.
Brad? Yeah, no, Brad. Yeah.
What color roof cladding?
That was basalt.
So relatively light.
Yeah, sort of a mid lightish grey. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's where we come to that problem, isn't it, Brad? That, you know, darker colors are better for drying, but yeah, they're worse for the summer.
And then your counterbattens on that roof system, are they continuous or just blocked under the actual battens?
So those ones are, from memory, yeah, they're continuous and they're 35 mil.
Yeah, and then so what impact would that have on the whole of roof ventilation, as well as how much area you've got to capture moisture?
Yeah, so you've got more timber, so more moisture buffering capacity within that timber, I suppose. The stack effect, though, is still driving the air up. So what we want, I would argue, is a clear cavity from bottom of walls, top of ridge, for that air to drive up and out. You're not going to get an awful lot of cross movement. So if those battens are continuous as opposed to blocked, I'm not sure that that's going to make a huge difference, except maybe if it's windy, you know, if the lee side of the building and it's driving air across the building.
What pitch was it? Because you had 35, not say 19. Was it like a lower degree pitch roof?
Yeah, it's a 15-degree roof.
Yeah, okay.
And isn't it around 14 and less, like the ventilation rate, like the stack effect's drastically lower?
I don't know about that. I haven't seen any numbers on that.
Yeah, just at the symposium they were chatting about it, and they said less than a 3 in 12 doesn't ventilate very well consistently, you know, especially in, you know, without wind pressure or, you know, temperature difference. And that's about 14.4 degrees, 3 and 12.
Which would make sense with the NCC ventilation rates per they're now putting, depending on the pitch of the roof, the ventilation rates that are required. I think it's probably good. Brad and I were chatting on the phone this morning about the difference between ventilation and vented. I think that's something you should maybe before I jump to Jess, you should explain as well, Brad.
Yeah, so ventilated is obviously openings at the bottom and the top that are going to allow air to come in one end and exhaust out the other end. And vented would be just holes, you know, not necessarily holes at the top and bottom. So, and they don't operate the same way.
Jess, you got something?
Yeah, you got me? Can you hear me? My question is actually around if we could clarify for everyone listening what treatment to timber actually does, whether it's treating, my understanding is that it's treating for termites and fungus rather than mold itself. So if we could get some clarity around what the treatments actually achieve. And the second question, Cam, was the moisture content in your timber battens was only 14-15%, which doesn't promote mold growth in itself, despite the cold temperatures and high relative humidities in those cavities. So can you comment on that? Not sure what my question is, but just an
observation. Yeah, I thought 20%. I thought 20% was a number that you needed to get to rot or timber decay of moisture content.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. And my question also, just to clarify for the audience, especially what I'm not quite sure who's listening, but just exactly what the treatment is trying to achieve.
Yeah, shall I have a go at that, Matt?
Well, anyone that wants to jump in can have a go. Yeah.
Maybe just briefly then, there's insecticides and fungicides in these treated timbers. And the fungicides is probably the one we're interested in. And as far as I know, mold is fungus. So the fungicide should be reducing the ability for these fungal organisms to grow and generate that mold that we see. On the second point with regard to the wood moisture content, that's true. But bear in mind that these screw-based sensors are telling you the moisture deep inside the timber, not at the surface. And it's the surface that I think is the problem or the concern, particularly in these cases where we've got very transient moisture exposure, sort of 6 to 12 hours. It's going to get in the surface, maybe the first, let's call it 3 to 4 mil, but it's not going to deeply penetrate within the timber.
But if that's the first to dry out.
And if it dries out during the day, maybe you're all right. But if you're getting 12 hours of accumulation, and if, you know, if you look at the Finnish mold model, it's working in 12-hour increments. If you have got it wet enough for that period, are you just starting to get spore development or mold growth, which then may do nothing during the middle of the day, but that can continue to grow again overnight when conditions allow and accumulate over time.
Sorry, Cam, have you got any of the sensors in the actual roof batten or only in counter battens?
They're all in the counter battens, Brad.
Just as when you look up the cavity, like once the roof cladding's on, most of the moisture sheds down the backside of the roof sheet. And most of, you know, like where you're going to get a little bit on the timber is probably on the top side of the actual roof batten, not the counter batten. Most, you know, especially in the corrugations, most of it's going to make its way all the way down and out. It, definitely from what I've witnessed firsthand, there's not a lot that drops down onto the membrane. So probably, again, not a lot that's going to drop down onto the counter batten. Probably most of it's going to accumulate on top of the roof batten itself. And I know in New Zealand, even though they use treated pine, they're putting a capillary break like DPC on top of their roof batten. Which I assume serves two purposes. One, as a capillary break, and two, to stop, you know, the interaction of the chemicals in the treated pine batten with the metal cladding.
Yeah, you might be right there, Brad. The top face of the roof batten might be even worse. But I guess, if anything, that just exacerbates the concern that I'm raising.
If you've got a colour bond, for example, which it seems on that, you've got the ridges in the colour bond, wouldn't and shouldn't that run down the back end of the colour bond, which would give you more drying capacity because of the 16 mil corrugations?
Yeah, I suppose so. But remember, it's not always, you're not always, ventilation is not always giving you drying. At midnight, it's giving you wetting. Because that cold 3-degree air that's driving into our cavity is now being cooled even more. And what little moisture is in that air is now condensating on the back face of our roof sheet. And as Brad points out, getting sucked up into the top of the roof button.
Mog, you got a question?
Yeah, I was, because I am building a house on the weekends, I have the ability to watch non-treated pine perform over winter, probably longer than you'd typically like to see it, you know, exposed if you was, you know, concerned about non-treated getting wet. We battened at south side in Tasmania of the house for colour bond, so vertical battens, horizontal battens, 35 mil, 35 mil. A lot of it was exposed all winter, so it probably seen more wetting than it ever will. So, but what I noticed is we had one batten that, you know, when you get a pack of plate and there's sometimes a little bit of mould on it and you chuck it aside, put it on there for like the purpose of knowing, and that one batten got, you could see a lot of surface mould on it, and then the rest stayed like perfectly fine, to the point where I was like, cool, cut it, replaced one batten, and I was good to go. So I guess that's kind of a statement, but a question I had would be, what would be a more harsh environment, something that is exposed to the weather and gets wet for a whole season, but also has the ability to dry at its fullest, or a ventilated cavity where it sees 1% of the rain, but it has more drying capacity. So just because, you know, it's something that I've seen in practice that all the counterbattens and the battens survived winter where they did spend whole days that were wet, and then when they did get the opportunity to dry, it dried fine, and then by the time, call it 7 months later, I looked at it, I'm like, good to go. I'm gonna cloud that. So yeah, that's I guess that's my question.
If I jump in, Mog, one of the effects I wonder is the solar radiation. You've got direct exposure of those timbers to the sun when it does come out. As soon as you put the cladding on, does that change the dynamics of the problem? There's a question mark.
You're probably right. It's just an observation I had that, yeah, like how that house is situated through winter, that place did not see like any sun. Whether the only sun it would see is potentially reflection off the puddles that are behind the house. So yeah, it was such a wet environment that I thought this would be the most rigorous test for non-treated. And from what I've seen, it was only one season, and we're talking about we want houses to last 100 years. So you have a very compelling argument. But I was like, well, there's one batten that I already knew had mold on it, and then yeah, I've seen that, and I thought, well, replace that one, and the rest were fine. But that also does raise another question: is like with your non-treated timber, I'm seeing a lot more timber come to site with mold on it already. Like we're sending lengths back. And having discussions with suppliers that, you know, it's coming out of the factory with mold. Not so much factory, coming out of the supplier with mold, you should say.
Mog, are you moist testing your timber when it rocks up on site?
For framing, yes. For framing. And then usually you can tell by looking at it what's over because it has mold on it. Usually like the suppliers that I work with know that I'm pretty fussy, so they always make sure it's wrapped properly. But yeah, you do get the odd side that's been exposed to the weather in the timber yard and it's got mold on it.
Yeah, we had some stuff rock up like 35% in the center of a pack. We sent it back and cracked the shits about it and carried on, and they fixed it, but I don't know, it's just something you got to be aware of, I think, like, because that's a scheduling thing, isn't it? Like, you might not get the pack of timber the next day and you might need it that day. So it's just something I think to be mindful of is, like it can come wet. What are you going to do about that?
What point do you turn it away? What percentage will you turn it away at?
Oh, over 20, wouldn't you? Like it wants to be dry.
But then Cam's timber there never hit 20% though.
Mm. Yeah, but if it's starting at 20%, how long you got to sit it there before you install the cover it over?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, 100%. What's it meant to? 11 to 13%? Is that right?
How long does the timber take to dry? If you get it wet,
drying it out on site, we're usually force drying it out by air movers and stuff. So, like, it's hard to say how quickly does it dry out on site, because when we go around just before plaster and test our bottom plates and that, you've got what? What did you have at Relby, Sean? Like 100 fans?
Yeah, took us like 3 to 4 weeks. 3 to 4 weeks to dry the house out. Lucky it was a big house, so.
I might just jump in here quickly. There's
what
just
about,
a couple of questions in the chat here that I might just direct to different people. Hey, Jess, I might throw this one to you. Given that I'd say a good chunk of us using ProClimber membranes, and given your role at ClimberSure, you probably know a little bit about these particular membranes. Can the mold spores in this external timber that we're talking about now be transferred into the house? So say if we do have a cavity batten that does get moldy, is there a risk that that mold is actually going to transfer through that membrane into the house?
This was actually a question that I submitted because I had a client who asked me the same thing. She had some battens that went moldy on the backside, and she asked me. And I didn't have the answer, and I still don't have the answer. If Dan's on the call, he might be able to answer that one. She decided to replace all of her battens to be careful. But I'd be keen if Dan can chime in here, I'd like to know what he says.
I don't think his mic's working, but Dan, jump in.
Not sure we can.
But is the whole idea of the WRB, wouldn't them, like, I'm just reading up quickly here, it's to block bulk water and allow vapor transmission, and the mold organism itself is far too large to actually move through the membrane itself, and being a plastic layer, does mold grow on plastic?
It's a monolithic membrane that's airtight, so the way mold's transported is through air, typically. So you would think it would not be able to go through an airtight membrane.
So that's if you're using ProClimber. If you're not using ProClimber,
I was just about to jump in and just clarify that as well. Different. Like we're specifically talking about ProClimber membranes here, not other membranes that might be also vapor open, but can still have, you know, a percentage of air going through it.
Well, monolithic. Even outside of that, it's probably important to touch on the fact that not everyone is detailing their external membrane as a primary air control layer, and therefore, you know, there probably is a bit of risk that, you know, that air in that cavity is going to migrate inside.
I think probably the bigger issue.
I was just going to say, I might jump in on that. If you're building to National Construction Code, it's now telling us that we should have ventilated eaves, which is going to take air from your cavities into your roof space. And then if there's downlights or anything like that, then it's got access to go into the house. So, yeah, I think if you're not using a continuous, you know, detailed external wrap, the risk profile of those mold spores or the toxins from, you know, that treated pine entering the house is much, much higher.
Yeah. And Jess, on your point too, I reckon, is that if you have a would the mold move through the membrane? Well, I also think depending if you had like a fully sheathed house with ply or not, because if any moisture got stuck behind the membrane to the say ply, especially being an OSB ply, that could be a bigger problem within itself. And Cam, this data here that you produced, you had like a peel and stick membrane too.
Yeah, there is one there. Yeah. But I don't know, all of these membranes should be pretty airtight as long as the junctions are all detailed, right?
depends if they rip and tear what the membrane is. And over time, if there's wind loads in the wall and they're flapping about and ripping and staples are ripping off and, you know, all that sort of thing. It depends, Cam.
Yeah, or the installation of the cladding's loosey-goosey and people are popping shiners everywhere and ripping holes and shit.
And what do you say, Sean? Principles, not products?
Yeah, pretty much. What about compatibility of materials, right? What do we have to look out for? Does anyone know what we have to look out for if we're going to say, okay, treated pine may be the way forward? I know there's some compatibility in issues with color bond and the chemicals that are in treated pine, but what about the fixings,
adhesives?
Like what about the compatibility with the membranes?
Even claddings, different cladding types.
Yeah, I did a little deep dive. So, you know, the product, I think it's called EcoSeal, which is to kind of seal the ends of the treated pine once you cut it. It is a beast of a product. I think it's rated to H5. But you should be wearing gloves, goggles, respirator, full suit. So no skin contact at all. So really, really nasty stuff. And if it's ingested, it can cause like hardcore vomiting. So, you know, if you can imagine if you spray that onto your cladding battens and then that's going into your house because you don't have a detailed external wrap, is that worse than the mold spores? Probably.
Or just the people even just installing it. It's not fair to put the carpenters under that risk.
Yeah. But, yeah, the EcoSeal, it says their VOC on there. It says not available. So I'd be interested to know what the VOC content is in it.
So that's the EcoSeal is the treatment for timber. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. So it should be used to
boost the seal. And you've got to wear a frigging hazmat suit.
It's probably high performance too if you look on the back label.
There's probably passive outside.
Don't get me started.
get them squirming, Shawnee.
So, I mean, Cam, just back to the, you know, moisture content staying below 20, maybe there's a little bit of surface mold. Is that kind of where it's going to stop? If that's outside the envelope, is that a less toxic, you know, thing that's happening there than the treatment itself?
Yeah, that's the debate, isn't it, Dylan? My gut feel is I'm not worried for this crowd that builds these sorts of buildings that the mold's ever going to get into the building. I'm not worried about occupant health. I'm worried about the durability of the system because the mold's feeding off something. It's feeding off cellulose, which is in the timber. So if we get 100% mold coverage, we might not know for years, but if that's eating and destroying the timber, then does our cladding start falling off? That's my concern. And then the other point I just make, especially with your EcoSeal comment there, is like that's the stuff in the spray can, yeah, that gets everywhere and, yeah, it smells like terrible. I think that's like related to CCA when you look at the ingredients list.
Yeah.
And CCA exactly. Is one of our nastier versions. And I just caution that I think we should differentiate within treated timbers because there's different treatment types that will have different levels of harm to us in terms of our health. So as we do this sort of harm minimization risk calculation, if as I argue we ought to be using treated, I'm probably not saying let's go and find CCA somewhere.
Yeah. I think a lot of the wet sawn, so your 150 by 25 rough sawn, treated pine plinth board, sleepers, palings, all that's most likely still the CCA treatment. And, you know, sometimes those 25 mil rough sawns end up in counterbatten assemblies just because it's a convenient size. Most likely probably is the H3 LOSP, which is the lighter, but I think still 10 times the kind of recommended VOC for indoor climate. So still not fantastic.
Maybe, John, but it's probably not the insecticide, fungicide in the LRSP, but the carrier. So they use terps, like mineral turpentine, as I understand it, in a mix in the factory with the insecticides, and they pressure treat it to push that stuff in. And then when you get your pack and you know how it's wet and it stinks and it's sort of off gases for the next week or two, that's just the terps evaporating. So, yeah, you definitely don't want that in an enclosed environment. But once it's out of the build, out of the timber, after 1 or 2 weeks, I'd argue the risk is minimal.
So yeah, I've got Dan. I've got Dan typing questions too.
Common one anymore. It's switched now to ACQ, which is arsenic free.
You just got me thinking when you listen off those sizes, Dylan, about like when your valley boards rock up. Are they the correct? Like, how are they meant to be in contact with the back of the valley gutters? If they're,
Were you stalking Matt Garland's Instagram the other day? They run a thing of membrane down the valley which separates.
That's purely for social media. Like, he just does the last bit of it. He doesn't run it all the way up the valley.
Just poked it in.
Did you put the nail bag on to put that wrap on?
No,
then
I got my RMs a bit dirty. It was a bit muddy on site.
don't let Matt on the bag.
I had the Tesla on a heated steering wheel before I get into site. It was a cold morning to take that photo. Now I've got Dan's been actually messaging me. His mic's not working. So Dan has said, Cam, that your testing is a bit faulty because you should have had the two different battens sitting right next to each other and measure both. So you put them under the same environment.
Hard when you're not on the mic there, Dan. Two different battens.
So like you would have had a treated pine and then a normal pine batten on next to each other so you could measure them in the same spot, in the same location.
Yeah, so if we want to do an experiment to actually see where the mold grows, we should put an untreated block next to a treated block in one of these cavities and leave them for a couple of years and have a look. I don't think I was making any comparison in that sense, but I was just evaluating what the cavity is doing. So the environment within the cavity has got this relative humidity. Then the question is that sufficient to allow mold growth on either treated or untreated pine? And for that, we need the model in the absence of experimental data.
And now the other question he's got. So what if the LOSP is getting wet and due to the high moisture, would this activate the solvents again and would this fuck with the membrane? So with microforest ones, this can be significantly worse.
Do we know?
Mog or Jeff should be able to probably best answer that one. Especially if you're like cutting the treated timber and spraying it on site and then it goes down on the membrane. Is that potentially delaminating the membrane?
Dan is actually commenting in the chat.
Over long term, his concern is
that it is going to affect the WRB.
I think Dan needs to go and do some testing on that. Maybe we should get some proclimber testing on some.
Get it to the Fraunhofer's.
Yeah.
If we're talking about treated here in Australia and let's say New Zealand, what about globally? Europe, they don't use it. America is different again. They don't really do ventilated cavities as much, but they do use a closer grain timber globally. Are we worried about, say, just radiata non-treated pine, or is the solution something like a spruce pine, as our battening systems? Because I know in Tasmania we can get that for the same price we can for radiata pine.
I mean, we definitely should be using more durable products if we can. We're just sort of...
Radiata sucks.
Yeah, but we're a very timber...
It's just so cheap, isn't it?
Yeah, we're a very timber-orientated industry here, you know. The lack of structural sheathing sort of limits us from some of the alternative products that are on the market, but there's, you know, a number of other ventilated battens available now that are, you know, plastic, aluminium, that sort of stuff that would probably be not probably, would definitely be a lot more durable than timber and eliminates any concern of getting wet at drying or growing any mold.
I know there's like those James Hardie battens that are, I think, forget, was it, we're talking about Brad and Hamish, maybe Dylan the other day, that they've got those grooves at the back. But like, are we now, when we start putting these sort of made up battens on the wall, are we now limiting the drying capacity? Like they might be treated pine, but now they can allow for moisture to drain out, but they're not allowing for much ventilation because they've closed that gap up.
But if the water can drain and get out, how important is ventilation then? Like what Cam's saying, sometimes the ventilation's a double-edged sword. Yeah, it adds to the drying potential, but in particular climates at particular times of year, you're introducing more moisture.
It'd be interesting to see this over summer and what happens over your summer, which I'd assume to be way more drying and they should be quite, the moisture content should really drop. But also, just thinking out loud here, like this, where is this Alexandra, Cam? So you're pretty exposed to the elements where you are out there. So if you took this into a, say, suburban inner city residential scope, are we having any difference because the building's now being blocked by other buildings and we're not having as much air move past potentially through wind?
Potentially, Matt, but it could work both ways for us, can't it? It can reduce the ventilation, therefore reduce the ventilation drying, reduce the ventilated air movement into the cavity, but probably increases the average temperature because of heat island effect from where we are. So again, we go around in circles as going, which thing wins here?
Well, Cam, you're a rocket scientist, so you should make louvered ventilation screens so that when it's not introducing humid air into the cavity, we close it off. And then when we want it to dry, we open it up and we all win and happy days.
We put whirlybirds on our walls, Brad.
We could do that. We actually haven't spoken much about walls at all. And the moisture on a wall is probably a little bit of a different beast than on the roof, because you start introducing many different types of claddings that, you know, the cladding themselves might be sensitive to moisture and introduce moisture to the timber battens. Everyone's quiet.
You know, struggling to keep up with the conversation and the chat.
I think another point as well is tropical climate. Yeah. Oh, you go, Matt.
No, sorry, you go, Matty.
No, I was just going to say it also makes a point of going through a tropical climate, because we will probably live in working cooler climates as well. Like, how does this flip on a tropical climate or an alpine climate?
Use hardwood maybe in tropical.
Welcome to the conversation, Drew.
So you'd fallen asleep there, Drewzy. You're with us.
Yeah, so why hardwood? Why would you go hardwood? Or what would you do with your house? Like, you're building your house and going way over and above at the moment. What have you done? Well,
to be honest with you, I've just ordered standard pine. So until this conversation, I might have to send a bit of it back. But yeah, just standard pine. I thought the drying capacity of it would be fine. I've ripped off plenty of claddings with just untreated pine before and it was fine. So there wasn't much mold that I could see. Maybe there was microbial growth, but I couldn't see it. So, yeah, don't know.
But this
can
is only one.
Can I just get back to the question about tree?
Go, Jess.
I just want to go back a little bit, back about 15 minutes or so, back to the question about treated timber and coming into contact with colour bond. Apparently you can't have treated timber in contact with colour bond. So does that mean that you would have a treated counterbatten and a non-treated batten or purlin?
In New Zealand, they put DPC on top of the treated batten to give you that separation from timber to underside of metal cladding.
So they put an extra layer on top of it. We don't do that in Australia.
You know, not in Australia, in New Zealand, which New Zealand's probably arguably a little bit further ahead than us.
I think a lot of the box gutters.
I think a lot of the box gutters now got dudes in Vic using the separation mesh or the sky on or something like that, but not the treated pine plinth board anymore.
Are the roofing screws good enough galvanization to go into the treated pine batten?
It depends what ones you're using.
Spacs make good roofing screws. You have to use the ultra ones.
No, they make shit roofing screws. They make good rest. They don't make roofing screws. They make good other screws, though.
Haim, do you have any comments from the comment section?
I've been enjoying listening to all of this and reading the comments on here. I did have a question, though. Or probably just more of a comment, actually. Like, I've always kind of been in the mind frame that anything that we have that's touching the membrane, we would typically have as a 25 by whatever rough sawn timber batten, so that's treated. And then on top of that, we would have our just typical MGB10. Now, touch wood, you know, I've never had an issue, and that's what I've done for the past 6 or 7 years since we've been doing these sort of ventilated cavity systems. I mean, I don't know where I'm really going with this, but and probably just throw this back to Cam, from this, I guess, the testing that you've just done or experiment you've just done, you're saying that it's actually the environment in there that's impacting the timber. It's not necessarily what substrate it's touching. So it doesn't matter if it's elevated off the membrane or touching the membrane. It's still in that same environment, still at the same risk. Is that right?
Yeah, I think that's right, Hamish. What I'm saying is that you've got this volume of air with very low temperatures, very high relative humidity, encapsulated between cladding and membrane with timber in the middle of it, a moisture-sensitive material. And it's remaining so for a relatively prolonged period of time, 10 to 12 hours. Is that enough to start causing you a problem? And that's a question. I'm not saying that we definitively have a problem here. I'm just saying the conditions exist that would suggest you're going to get mold growth. And if we believe the mold growth models that we all use, then as I demonstrated, you feed in that experimental data, real data, not theoretical climate data, real data for your client, for the situation, then that says you've got a problem.
Aren't they just models, Cam, as you say?
But they're just models, and all models are wrong. Some are useful. We don't know if this model is useful. And I think that there's an excellent point there. We've got to rip off our claddings on some jobs. We've got treated battens or untreated battens. Whack the opposite in. So just stick a few blocks of untreated in next to some treated battens and leave them for a couple of years and come back and have a look.
And also look at it, especially where you've got different roof pitches, because the surface tension and how quick the water will shed out of that cavity, especially on the underside of the roof cladding, is drastically different on a 25-degree roof than it is on a 3-degree roof, as is the ventilation rate.
Yeah, absolutely, Brad. So whack them near the valleys in that roof on the flat bits, whack them on the south facades of our walls, the critical space.
Yeah, and then same like cladding colours, like the lighter the roof, the less radiation, so the less drying. So I think it's a matter of being climate specific and project specific for how much you look at, hey, are we going to get away with just running pine battens on all of this, or do we need to run treated, or do we need to run an alternative counter batten and a metal roof batten and then eliminate any risk or most of the risk.
Do you reckon you could say something about the fixings, Mog? Like, I think you know a little bit about that. And if we are going to go with a treated pine fixing, treated pine batten or whatever, isn't there something that we have to look out for? Like, I know when we get your screws, they've got to be a specific coating on that screw to be compatible. Is that right?
Yeah, I've seen some testing done with just your normal 14-gauge run-of-the-mill but bugle screws, and they tend to rust out just above the thread. And I don't know why, but I imagine that's because, like, you know, when you're sending it in with a rattler, you can bust the hot dip galvanizer off. That's why, like, it's funny now that I sell them, but that's how I got on to SPACs originally through Dan, because they use, like, it's almost like a powder coat, like through an electro process where that, like, it sticks to it, and it's almost like a coating over it that's not just dunk and there's defects in it. So, like, you if you are going for a tread, you potentially want to be looking at something a lot better than just your normal cheap run hot dip galv, because there is the, yes, the cladding might fall off if you have mold growth over years, but your cladding will definitely fall off if you screw snap in half. So there's that to consider as well. Like, something that I had a good conversation earlier in the week with a good friend of mine is, what does the code say to this? And as with the code, it depends how you interpret it. And it depends how the building surveyor interprets it, because you actually call for, so H3 timber is called for in exposed above ground. But what is exposed? Is behind your rain screen exposed, or is exposed the outside of your WRB, or the back, or is it outside your cladding? So where do we draw the line with that? And I guess the answer is, it depends, as always. But you know, it's, I guess it depends how your builder surveyor interprets it as well.
Yeah, my take on that would be, like, exposed, not sheltered from it. Like, it's not sheltered by another material. That would be my interpretation.
If you look at Cairns data, it looks pretty exposed to me. There's a lot of exposure there. Lots of different, like, I guess what is exposure? Is exposure, like, no exposure is a consistent environment. And then you have this fluctuation. Is that exposed?
It can. I just to mog there. I'd just argue also, are we being a bit internally inconsistent? If on one hand we're saying we've got to do all this hard work with our WRBs because we've got to assume our cladding fails, and then we're saying, yeah, but we don't have to worry about the timber in that. It's sort of, you know, there's a bit of roundabout.
I think my take on that would be, like, the degree of moisture sensitivity behind the WRB is a lot greater than, like, you've got those fibrous insulations that are just totally shit and they get wet. Well, that's just my, like, 5-second take on that.
Agree with that, Sean. And I suppose the other thing is the timber's not exposed to liquid water. It's not getting driving rain on it, by and large, as opposed to genuinely exposed. But as Mogg's experiment on his own place demonstrated, that's not necessarily a bad thing if you've got plenty of ventilation and what limited sun you get in Tasmania in winter onto that too.
There was a comment here from Jordan about a thermally modified timber, and that thought actually crossed my mind as well. But I would think that, you know, if you're sucking all the, you know, the starches and stuff out of the timber, that process in itself is not a cheap process. I mean, you could probably use, like, a hydro wood as well, but, you know, that's astronomically expensive. So, you know, I do agree you could do it, but I think it's just cost prohibitive.
But doesn't it be even thermally modified? When you get the Logic House windows, they come on a pallet that, is it steam treated timber? True. Cam, you probably might know more about that.
I do have some downstairs, but no, I don't know.
What do they call it? It's not treated pine, but it's water resistant. Yeah.
I'm sure in Europe, I've spoken to a fair few people, and they don't use a lot of treated pine. No, it's all pine. So maybe I'm getting something wrong here, but I thought should be falling down by now. They've been doing it for 30
years. You look at the difference
years,
in timber, so they're probably using, like, older growth pines and firs and stuff like that. We predominantly build in fast-grown radiata. So maybe that's just a thought. I don't know. Yeah, that's just sort of a thought bubble that's coming to my mind. Yep.
Yeah.
Cam, I've got a question for you. I want to flip. So we're talking in a cooler climate where we've got sort of the vapor pressure is different, say, to a humid climate. Would this then make any, so a house internal battens, should they then be looking at a treated pine timber as well? Is there a risk of mold growth and mold decay from inside if not treated correctly with moisture?
No, not if the conditioned space has also got things like HRV in it to manage that moisture. So,
yeah, I mean, okay, dehumidifiers.
Still, sorry, Sean.
Yeah, okay. And the other question I had is around the moisture buffering capacity. So, with you have a treated timber is going to absorb and desorb water a lot slower than a standard radiata pine. What effect will that then have?
I'd argue in these cavities, the driving high grit buffering is going to come from the cladding. So if you've got a sky on or a timber cladding, that's going to, there's a huge surface area of that material to absorb and dissolve moisture, far more so than whatever battens you're putting in there. Whereas if you put like a metal cladding on, obviously there's no ability for that to absorb. So it's entirely the timber that's absorbing what's in there.
Yeah, but when your metal original comment, when we started this,
a lot faster than any cement sheet or timber cladding, though.
Sorry, Brad, say they started that again.
Like a metal cladding will shed the water a hell of a lot faster than a cement sheet or timber cladding will, especially if it's installed vertically.
So, what you could potentially see, so just to throw a hypothetical out there. At 6 a.m. before the sun comes up, you're getting all this condensate on the back of your metal cladding. You're getting water being absorbed into a wood or a fiber cement cladding. And then the sun comes out and it dries the cladding out, the moist cladding out, into the cavity. And I see that in my data because you're actually getting an increase in the relative humidity around 10 or 11 in the morning, which I assume is that cladding system drying out, that moisture driving into that cavity and then being carried away by the ventilation. So we've got a whole bunch of stuff going on and we're just not quite sure which is going to win.
What do you think the scenario would be like if it was like a slate or terracotta tile? So a lot more kind of...
Good question.
Air through there. Okay, with Pine Camp?
No. To me, it's something like a terracotta is kind of like a brick. We're now at a brick veneer, a really big high grit buffer. Like the rain hits it, it absorbs in like a sponge, the sun comes out and it drives this vast quantity of moisture into that cavity. That cavity has got to be well ventilated to get that out quick. And it's you know, ideally, again, I come back to my point, it's got to be made of materials that are less moisture sensitive.
So on that point, Cam, around, we had this around our retrofit rifle range project where we had the issue with brick and you're worried that we didn't have the membrane externally and the brick, you're worried about the pressure, or I think Marcus was concerned about the moisture getting into the cavity. But didn't you also argue that we wouldn't probably be getting 1%, which goes back to your original comment, we wouldn't be getting 1% of rain behind that brick or moisture behind that brick? Didn't we have issues around that, the conversation where you had to pull out your old physics notes and do something by hand?
Yeah, I did a bunch of modelling on that to try and demonstrate that it should be okay. One of the key strategies we took there, though, was we put that silane siloxane. Oh, no, that was a render, wasn't it? But you can put like a silane siloxane, like a waterproofing, clear waterproofing on the outside of your brick or your terracotta, or just render it so that you try to stop the rainwater absorbing into the brick.
Okay, so that was
if
what
you
we
do
did.
That,
okay.
You're trying to stop
okay.
the problem in the first
yeah.
place.
Is that what you put on the outside of the rockets as well?
No, vacuum insulated panels, aerogel, like he's got it all. That's how he knows so much about passive house.
Is it worth talking about, I mean, Cam, like time frames? I know it's tough, I suppose, with the data that's available, but are we talking, you know, pine failure in 6 months' time, 100 years' time?
So that mold model, you know, the one that I had with the mold index, And bear in mind, again, I've used real data there, like observed data, as opposed to synthetic made-up climate data for a particular climate zone. And that was suggesting mold growth in, you know, 3 or 4 months over that single winter period. So very, very quickly, if the model is true.
But how much mold growth do you need to start seeing serious, like, structural decay, like to where it becomes an actual failure? And I had this discussion with Drew after I got back from the US, and obviously a lot of the data that they have, you know, at Building Science Core is from studying failed buildings, but they haven't studied buildings that are yet to fail that have problems. You know, they're getting called in to examine buildings that are catastrophically fucked and not ones that are on the road to being fucked. Sorry, I went so bluntly.
You swear all you want, Brad.
Good old Aussie jargon.
But you actually make total sense there, though. Like, we're always taking the data from the buildings that have ruined and failed.
Yeah. And at what point, you know, like, how many people live in failed buildings that just ignore it?
This is the exact reason why we're going to run a test over the next 10 years on Matt's house. Just every year we're going to pull off a different section of his Ubuntu cladding and just test it. I think this
great
is going to be
for Ubuntu cladding again. I don't think we can get any sensors in my house anymore. That's my only problem. We might be able to get one or two on the roof. In the roof, I don't think we've put a capping on. We're going to be finished in like 3 weeks, so I'm just not sure if I can get it on.
I'm going to do a test in my house. I'm going to get a few of those sensors, and I'm going to go non-threaded. But yeah, we'll see how I go.
Cammy's going to go buy the best sensors in the world and put them on every stud.
I'll put a few more than two in there, though.
Yeah.
Do you think long summer period where, you know, it's going to dry right out, gives it enough buffer for it to get wet again through winter, or is that kind of not a vibe?
Others can jump in on this, but
Jess could jump in.
Yeah, Jess, go on then. Jess, tell us. Yeah.
Could I? I don't know. I was going to redirect the conversation back to the compatibility between treated timber and membranes. But I'm not sure about the answer to that question.
They're going to fail. I don't know if I can directly comment, but I was told that there's issues. Like, they're actually the three layers of the Extasana are actually delaminating from each other. That's what I was under the assumption of. And I think so, even more so on an Adhero product where you've got the, because it's all a complete peel and stick, that the issue is the actual glue at the back across the whole membrane is delaminating because of the treated pine. When it gets wet, that is. You're on speaker, bro.
Got his hand up.
Is it delaminating because the treated pine's releasing a solvent that's eating away at the acrylic backing on the peel and stick?
Well, I guess there's probably two issues here. Well, one, if this is a problem, the people whack on treated pine, but if a lot of the time they're getting a 90-45 cavity batten, ripping in half, now all of a sudden half of it isn't treated.
Can you just talk on all the pros of non-treated battens? That's one of them.
The pro is you don't have to treat it. And then essentially my understanding is if we start to spray these solvents and stuff onto it, like when it reacts with moisture, and there is going to be moisture in there, which Cam shows, what's the chemical reaction that's happening? I think that's probably really the most important part and dangerous part. That reaction is not known.
Looks like we got a problem both ways. Either way you go, you're fucked. So let's brainstorm some solutions. Like
steel frames, anti-con, steel battens, carbons.
Let's go. Yeah, that sounds really good.
Steel frames are sustainable too. Did you hear that?
But I think we've got Dan now as well.
Nah, his mic isn't working.
Oh, damn.
get to look at his pretty face.
Yes, sexy man.
He's probably hating this.
Is it Gallup? Because I don't think in Tassie we're in a little bit of a spot where we can still get hardwood timber. We can go buy it off the shelf. I don't think in Victoria it might be a lot harder to get these days. It is expensive. And then also, do you go to a tighter grain pine? Do you go to, like Brad was saying, do you go to a metal external batten with plastic spacers? What's the solution? Because it sounds like I personally wouldn't use treated on my site. First of all, I don't like breathing in. I don't like people who have worked for me in the past breathing it in. I wouldn't run the risk of it reacting with my membranes. I spend so long working on the membranes that I want to protect them. So what's in the group? Like, what's the solution?
I really like some of the alternative products. And it's been like a bit of a side quest mission of mine the last couple of years. Every time I go to the US, I push really hard to get people to send shit here. The lack of structural sheathing makes it a little bit difficult, but there's definitely some good products. Someone in the group chat asked, what if you use plastic packers between treated pine and the membrane to have separation? The big concern there for me would be compression and sealing around a fastener. So you want to have something half solid there to protect that penetration. I think now definitely on the current project that I'm doing, I'll probably most likely use a metal batten, and sometime between now and mid next year when we slap a roof on it, I'll try and find an alternative counter batten product to pack those metal battens up off of the membrane.
Is that because you're pretty exposed to the elements out there?
I'm super exposed to the elements. I've got a very low pitch, like a pitch that I argued really, really hard with the client to let me, can I please bring the parapet up one course of brick so I can have, you know, a little bit of extra pitch.
What pitch have you got?
Oh, three. And I argued for three.
Good.
He was at two. And I was like, please let me have five. I want five. And he's like, no, the building will be too high. Anyway.
Can I make an argument that treated pine is good for you? That'll get you all going. So,
health.
Go burn it in your fire, Cam.
Yeah.
Fires are good for you. Cam also has been sending me EMF information
in your indoor
last few weeks.
So here's my argument, right? Natural, everyone seems to think natural is good for you and artificial is bad and chemicals are all bad for you. Well, guess what? Everything is a chemical and everything in one way or another is effectively natural. So it's a completely arbitrary, in our heads, sort of differentiation.
But for that,
everything we do in our lives.
Has that suit to use?
Well, certainly that eco whatever stuff, yeah, we can agree that's a bit dodge. But it's a quantum, right? It's scale. You drive to site, there's a risk you're going to die in the ute on the way to site. You get to site and then you get out the saw and you start cutting up timber. You're generating a whole lot of dust, which you're breathing in, whether that's untreated or treated pine. And that's particular matter that's bad for you. And here's the other kicker. When you decide you're going to use hardwood battens because they're so cheap for your cavity system, when you cut that, you're actually generating a lot more ultra-fine particulate matter than when you cut softwood. Softwood tends to be a chunkier little bits that don't get so badly into you. So hardwood is worse for you than softwood in terms of the dust. And this is where I come back to like CCA. Yeah, I'm definitely not wanting to go near that either. But I would argue that LOSP in the scale of things we're exposed to in life is at the lesser end of the spectrum.
Do you worry about EMFs too, Cam?
That's why I have my tinfoil hat, mate.
Won't be disparaging that.
I think it. We'll touch on that one another time.
Is it worth just touching on end of life a little bit?
What do you do with it? Yeah.
Obviously, we don't want to just kick this can down the road for someone else to deal with. So, what is the game plan for treated pine once
do a reno or pull a building down, God forbid.
Do you just take the boomer approach and hope they work that out in 50 years?
Problem. It's that kid's problem.
Yeah. It's like seems everything else in life is that way.
So somebody has commented, so then we've got this issue with treated battens in contact with colour bond or steel. We've got treated battens have a problem in contact with membranes. So no matter what side it's on, there's a problem somewhere depending on what cladding you're using. So someone has suggested in the comments non-treated in contact with the membrane, so a non-treated counter batten or a batten if they're vertical, and then a metal in contact with any colour bond cladding. That sounds like a sensible solution to me. Anyone else?
I think that's what way I'll go.
Yeah.
Jess.
Yeah, that's, I reckon that's great for like the roof assembly, but I think the wall cladding, you kind of need another potentially a timber batten for depending on what the cladding finish is. Like if you've got weatherboards or, you know.
Timber cladding, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, there's no reason why you can't screw fix cladding to a metal batten, though.
It's annoying.
I don't know.
You can never wear
even Brad, even me in my office.
Now, come on.
too much time in America. It's definitely not impossible.
You strip the screw a little bit.
You got to get good screws. You got to be patient. You got to know how to drill straight.
And then, yeah,
where can you get good screws, Malt?
You're asking a lot for a lot of.
Well, are we trying to build the most durable buildings ever, or are we just trying to, you know, it is what it is. If it takes an extra few hours or a couple of days to clad a house because you screw it to a metal batten and the house lasts an extra 50 years, is that not worth the trade-off?
The cladding can't be screwed to metal top hat for the non-builders in the room. Was that my only?
No, Kat, they're saying most people, it's a pain in the ass. You'd rather just shoot it to a timber batten and be done with it.
Like, I would screw timber cladding to a metal top hat batten just because there's so much movement in timber. So I feel like there is elements, like there is parts where it works, and it's like everything, isn't it?
So timber cladding.
Like, it works in some areas, it doesn't work in
timber
others.
Timber cladding, you use treated pine or you'd use a.
I would just use a timber batten. I wouldn't use a top hat batten for timber cladding just because timber moves so much.
I'd be worried that the screws would shear. Although, like, you're putting that many screws in it, like if, you know, half a dozen screws sheared or 100 screws sheared over, you know, 5,000 screws, you've probably got a small problem. But I don't know. I wouldn't want to be screwing into a metal top hat for timber cladding, personally.
If you look at the temperature differences between in that ventilated cavity, timber doesn't expand the same as steel. So you've got two forces working against one another. And if you're using a small gauge screw, like, something's going to give, whether it be the screw, the batten, the timber, it's moving somewhere.
I mean, the cavities themselves as well. Like, obviously, the lower the pitch goes, the deeper the counter batten you're supposed to use. Now, is that so that the timbers can dry out, or is it so that, you know, why is that cavity bigger all of a sudden?
Well, you can say when you get down to like your low pitch roof, say ProClimber's low pitch roof system. If you're looking at like a 10 meter span, you're looking at like 100 mil counterbatten, or to 15 meters, you're looking at 150 mil counterbatten. And why they do that is because when you're at those super low pitches, you don't actually have any stacking effect. There's no intake or outtake, so you just have air. So what that bigger cavity does is it's more gas to absorb that moisture and wait for the sun to heat your dark roof. And then through the heat, it expels the moisture out the ventilation. As like Brad was saying before, there's a difference between vented and ventilation. So you just, all that air inside that builder is just taking on as much moisture as it can, heats up, and then expels out.
You've also got to consider that most low pitch roofs are also accompanied with a parapet wall, which is the stupidest shit ever, because now you've also blocked any wind driven force for that cavity as well.
And then a box gutter, and how do you vent that? Because building
science topic, guys. We got 2 minutes.
So I'm going to wrap this up now because we'll just keep going, and Drew's just getting rolling and he's keen to keep going. But no, thanks everyone coming. Thank you all for this. This was fun. I've actually got a message from Sean saying he's loving it. So next topic, we're going to look at, we're trying to do this the first week of each month. We're probably 6th of November will be the next one. That is just after Melbourne Cup for those in Victoria. Topic, anyone want to throw a good topic out there?
Warm versus cold roofs.
Juicy.
Let's go. Let's go.
That's a good one.
Done. All right. We're going to stop this now.
Also, Maddie, we might put a question out on the Mindful Builder social media just for people to pop in some ideas around topics that they want to discuss. Yeah. We might just bank a few up.
Just send us in.
Don't
can we summarize just before we go? There are people probably getting off the call now, but there's a comment here saying lots of chat, but no definitive answer, which we don't want to leave people leaving thinking that, because there was a lot of chat. Is there, can we quickly come up with a 2 minute, helpful answer for the crowd?
Pam says, haven't changed my opinion.
How about a vote?
I'm still not using
democracy. A vote, non-treated.
I'm still untreated.
Untreated.
Like, I like the untreated chemicals away metal from me. on the cladding side, or timber for timber cladding.
I like non-treated and a DPC under the metal cladding to stop absorption of that top batten.
Yeah. I don't think we need to definitively answer unanimously, do we? That's what makes it great. Different opinions, different.
Building great again.
That's it. I did want to say that I noticed the total amount of people that jumped onto the call hadn't dropped until the last sort of minute or so. So that's to mean some interesting chat out there.
Thanks for staying, guys.
Yeah, I think also just the other thing to remember is the fact that, you know, we're sitting here in, 2025 and all of us know what a fucking ventilated cavity is. I think that's a huge step forward towards much better building than what we were before. And the fact that we're sitting here having a healthy discussion around whether it should be treated or not should be treated it makes for a great conversation and a topic. And whether or not we actually have to solve it now, I don't necessarily think it's true. But the fact that people are expecting this to be a thing on their builds now, I think it's something that everyone in this group should be proud of, because everyone here has played a part in doing that. So, I think that as we move forward with these discussions, I mean, don't expect things to get solved. This is just an opportunity for us to talk things through. So, in my opinion, treated or non-treated, I think you could do both. This is just my personal opinion. But make sure you've got a cavity batten in there. Make sure that water can drain out of your cavities. Make sure that you're not blocking the bottoms up with, inappropriate cavity closers. Make sure you're venting your eaves. Make sure you're venting at the rooftop. And I think if we do that as a minimum, I think we're on a great path forward to more durable buildings. But treated versus non-treated, I don't know. Take your pick. Throw a dart. On one building, do one. On the other building, do the other. On one elevation, do one. On one elevation, do the other. That's just my opinion.
That's a good place to leave it. Thanks, guys. Thank you.
Thanks.
See you on the next one.